summertime tips and fun facts from Paul, Kristen, and Dexter at Total Wine & More.
If you're topping off your burger with grilled onions and blue cheese, pair your work of art with a spicy Malbec.
Nothing beats a buttery Chardonnay with grilled corn on the cob. I'm ready to find you the perfect bottle of white for your next get-together.
Pack up the cooler for this weekend. We've got canned wine and beer ready to throw on ice.
Now with 9 locations in the Bay Area. Visit our newest store at Stevens Creek Central. Shop online at TotalWine.com. The selection is ridiculous. Cheers.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
I'm Melissa Idris. I've got Brian Fernandez here in the studio with me, ready to take a look at emerging markets and China. And we have on the line with us from New York, Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management.
Good morning, Joe. OPEC and other non-OPEC producers are poised to meet in Vienna on Thursday to decide output policy. What's your view on the direction of the meeting, given that there's pressure on one hand to maintain production cuts till next year, but on the other hand, Russia wants to end cuts because of the gains in market share that U.S. shale producers have made?
Well, it's a tough call by OPEC, because if they're successful with the production cuts and you've got strong global growth, you know, prices are going to continue to rise. But the more the prices rise, the more the North American shale producers will come back online. And by the way, North American shale producers, they're very competitive at, like, say, $30, $35. So, you know, they're going to see anything where prices are today, you're going to see a lot more production tomorrow. So it's a tough balancing act when it comes to regulating the supply and demand of this global commodity.
So what sort of target prices do you have for oil prices in 2018? What sort of range are you looking at?
We're looking at a range of $45 to $55. You know, we might see spike in oil prices if OPEC can keep the production off and work with Russia, get, you know, good global growth. I think the biggest wild card for 2018 will be some type of geopolitical event in Saudi Arabia versus Iran. There's a very tense situation between those two countries as they kind of vie for regional influence. So I wouldn't rule that out, but I think in general oil prices are fairly priced between $45 and $55.
Now, given geopolitical issues aside, now one of the issues that has come up is the lack of investment in oil projects, which, according to the CEO of Mubadala, will come back and bite the energy market. Is that the view that you share moving forward?
I mean, not necessarily, because there has been a lot of investment here in North America, particularly in the shale, you know, whether it's North Dakota, Oklahoma, Texas. And this production can be brought on very quickly. I mean, it's very quickly how this production can be brought online if need be. So I don't think there's a lot of capital underinvestment in the United States. You could say there's almost too much, that we had a downturn and kind of washed out the marginal producers. But there's underinvestment in the United States when it comes to exporting more crude and natural gas. That's where we need investment. Globally, however, I think these taps can be turned down a lot quicker than might otherwise be suggested.
So that will then moderate oil prices?
Well, I think so. You know how it is. The higher oil prices go 1 year, the next year you've got the capacity coming on stream to meet that demand. And I don't see that changing anytime soon.
Now let's move on to emerging markets. And the MSCI Asia Pacific Index was up for the seventh week in eight, as stocks look like to end 2017 on a high note, especially because of strong corporate earnings. What's fueling this appetite for emerging market stocks?
Well, particularly in Asia, it's different from Latin America in the sense that Asia, I mean, a lot of it's being tech-driven. So great technology companies in, say, South Korea, certainly China, and really across the region is driving it. And then also what's driving the performance in Asia-Pacific is this consumption-led growth. You know, it's not based on trade. It's not based on, you know, the currency obviously has a big effect, but, you know, these economies, you know, Malaysia included, you know, they're driving growth internally. You know, that's a big driver. So I think that's helping earnings and giving investors confidence to stay the course. So I think we're going to see a good end to the year. I think a good beginning to next 2018 as well.
So you mentioned Malaysia. What sort of, what countries are you overweight on in terms of the Asia-Pacific region?
Well, I mean, we look more and more by sector. You know, countries are kind of agnostic on. But, you know, when you talk about technology, obviously Malaysia is very much plugged into the global technology, global supply chain. As I said, the internet companies in China, the logistics banks in Singapore, some of the Indian banks as well, and then anything consumption-related in Malaysia, because we, you know, the consumer is the driver globally. It's just not just in the emerging markets; it's in the developed, you know, Japan as well, Europe. So I think, you know, we have a bias towards more consumer-oriented and technology-driven names, as well as financials.
BlackRock has an opposing view on Malaysia. BlackRock seems to think that Malaysia is underweight for them because they see its valuations are stretched. What are your views on Malaysia?
Well, I mean, a lot of people are saying, bucketing Malaysia like all the emerging markets. You know, very strong year, valuations are stretched, not as cheap anymore. But I would argue this, that we're still putting money to work in the emerging markets because they're, you know, although the Fed, I think, is going to raise rates again next year, there's still lots of money out there. It's a low-yielding world. I think there's a lot more institutional and retail investors that come into the emerging markets, Malaysia included. So I'm not worried about that. I mean, I'm encouraged that there's some, like, pushback on the emerging markets, because to me that tells me it's becoming a less crowded trade, more balanced, and to me there's more upside.
So let's move on to China. And early China indicators signal that the economy has cooled down this month, as China shifts obviously to a more sustainable economic growth rates and pushing through reforms really to cut pollution and curb risk. Which sectors are you putting your money to work at?
Well, China's very strong in lithium batteries, the internet, e-commerce, as I talked about. I think financials are going to do well. Healthcare. China has to build out a total new healthcare system to take care of their aging demographics, dementia cases, and diabetes. So really, it's really across the board. I would avoid the state-owned enterprises. I mean, if I want to invest money in China, I want to put the money to work in the private sector, privately owned companies, as opposed to the state-owned enterprises. Albeit they do have a, you know, marketing power and pricing power to a degree, backed by the government, but I would be, you know, very focused on technology, healthcare, financials, and global climate change, certainly. I mean, any company that can help clean the air, clean the water, better food security, you're going to do well in China.
Now, let's move to China's debt issue. And Reuters analysis showed that China's debt is basically grown at the fastest pace in 4 years in September. By some estimates, the overall debt is now three times the size of the economy. Is that a concern for you?
It's a concern, but I'm less concerned because a lot of this debt is in local currency. There is some dollar-denominated debt, but they paid that off a couple of years ago, a big chunk of that. China is still running a surplus when it comes to merchandise and current account surplus, so they have the inflows to cover the cash. And I do think at the end of the day, China is a command and control economy, so like they can create a bad bank really quickly to kind of cover some of these losses. That's not a good way to deploy capital, no. But I don't see anything systemically in China dragging down the economy and or being exported to the rest of the world. So that's the key there. They've got $3 trillion in reserves. It's not all theirs. The government's not all liquid. But they have the financial wherewithal. But they do have to be very carefully and delicately work down some of these non-performing loans. That's going to be a big challenge in the next 5 years.
Thanks for your insights, Joe. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management in New York.
Thank you, Brian. Let's take a look at the local business scene after this with news that the IRB is auditing 15 banks for offshore transactions. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Summertime tips and fun facts from Paul, Kristen, and Dexter at Total Wine & More.
If you're topping off your burger with grilled onions and blue cheese, pair your work of art with a spicy Malbec.
Nothing beats a buttery Chardonnay with grilled corn on the cob. I'm ready to find you the perfect bottle of white for your next get-together.
Pack up the cooler for this weekend. We've got canned wine and beer ready to throw on ice.
Now with 9 locations in the Bay Area. Visit our newest store at Stevens Creek Central. Shop online at TotalWine.com. The selection is ridiculous. Cheers!